Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me today is Jeff DeRuden, a hilarious New Orleans comic, and we're going to call him right now.
Hello?
It's Jeff D.
Hi, Eric. How's it going?
What's up, buddy? So the last time I saw you was September 2018 at Oz.
Oh, wow. That was that long ago?
Yeah. 2 years
Good
ago.
God.
So.
Oh, my. How things have changed.
Unbelievable. But can we talk about that night a little bit? You used to host. Everything's shut down with COVID right now, but you used to host this kind of drag comedy show. And that's where I met. That's where I met a love of my life, called Ashley. Ashley was doing a karaoke performance. Who's Ashley?
Ashley is a white trash young lady who I have complete and total respect for, despite the fact that she's completely unrespectable. She's a character I do that's kind of based on a lot of women I know. I'm from Lake Charles, Louisiana. God bless the people of Lake Charles who are going through a very difficult time right now. But I sort of, she's sort of this combination of just women I've known. I actually do a sort of a more cleaned up version of her in shows sometimes, and more recently the shows I've been doing online. You know, she's just like the southern hairdresser who says too much and can't stop talking. And, you know, then she's also the white lady at the Walmart. You know, she's just sort of a combination of white ladies I know from the South.
Yeah. So did New Orleans escape Hurricane Laura?
Yes. New Orleans did not get anything. We had some rain and the temperatures went down, but not a lot of rain. Here's the thing about living in Louisiana. If you're in the dead of summer and you get nice weather, it means that people are getting completely fucked somewhere else. You know what I mean?
Because the cold weather comes in from the hurricane that's right nearby, and you're like, oh, look, who turned on the AC?
Yeah, it's so nice here. Meanwhile, people are losing their livelihoods and their homes, so that's just the way it is. I remember when Katrina hit, I was actually in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and it was a beautiful day. So, you know, it's the way it goes.
Oh, wow, wow. Yeah, I remember I moved out. I went to the University of New Orleans, and I moved out July 24th of 2017. And then July 29th and 30th, the Friday, Saturday, it flooded so bad I would have lost my car. Like, every other year. You know,
there's always some kind of weather event here in Louisiana. It really makes you, you know. And I said, you know, God, is this really the best place to live? You know, because I mean, 2 weeks from now, New Orleans could get a Category 4 hurricane. You just don't know, right? You just never know what's going to hit. You know, and I was talking to my father about it, who's from Lake Charles and actually is evacuated right now. But he was saying, you know, Jeffrey, every place has their natural disasters, and I'm like, ooh, I don't know about that, Dad. I'm not so sure about the middle of Montana. You know, I think that's, you know, I want to go live in a town, Eric, where there's like the hardware store is just called Hardware Store. And then there's, you know, the grocery store is just like Joe's Grocery, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
I wanna go live in one of those towns with one street, you know. Long as I have Wi-Fi.
Like, you know, the butcher, like you could bring the butcher a deer and he'll carve it up for you.
Absolutely. I will not be bringing the butcher a deer unless I hit it with my car. But exactly what you're saying, you know, like one of those little towns, although I'd want to be wealthy. Right, and I'm not wealthy.
Right, yet. Right, right.
So I'd want to be wealthy living there so that, you know, I got really nice shit. I don't want to just go be broke in a small town and have to, like, pick up shifts at the diner on the weekend. You know, that's just called Mary's Diner. You
right,
know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right. Well, I don't know. Buy low, it's still high. I don't know anything about business. I'm broke as shit, too.
Me neither.
I want to talk about what Jeff D's life has been like before the lockdown and after. Like, I've been going through periods of funks because, you know, when you're used to performing five nights a week and then it goes to zero, it's like it was a real adjustment for me. How has it been for you?
God. Yeah, it was a big adjustment. Particularly, I was at a point in my career in March where I was actually really starting to get some traction. Particularly in out-of-town shows. I had a lot of out-of-town gigs booked. I was going to be hosting a show at Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club in Vegas. And it all just kind of went away. You know, I was asked a lot of people wanted me to do online shows, and I did a few of them. I have to tell you, Eric, my creativity and will to sort of really work on things was zapped away. You know, like I was sort of in a state of dread, particularly when we were like, you can get it from everything, you have to wipe your groceries down with bleach, and who knows what the hell, you know what I mean, like that whole period. I just couldn't work on anything, and I'm really just now getting to a place where I feel creative again. So how did it affect me? Bad. I just, like, as a creative person, I lost all drive and, you know, ability.
Yeah, and I just dropped a couple specials on YouTube.
You were working, or you had done that beforehand?
I shot. Remember, so I came through New Orleans, September 2018.
Uh-huh.
I drove from Los Angeles to New Orleans to New York City, and I filmed 50 shows. And to be honest, I lost a lot of money doing that. But you know, right. I got paid two beers and a freaking drink, you know, and a pizza sometimes.
I think I paid you $25, Eric.
You
Didn't
might
I
be
pay
right.
$25.
So that was one of the high-paying gigs, you know.
Okay, good.
Driving
good
across the country, yeah. Putting a can.
I'm the McDonald's management of comedy bookers. Is what I am.
But you know, I had a camera guy with me, and we stayed in a hotel every night. So that was, you know.
Oh wow.
That's where it happened. I stayed a little bit at a friend's house in New Orleans, though, because I, you know, have contacts there. But anyway. I finally dropped the special. So when things were open and it was edited, I was like, all right, I need to get 10 more minutes. I need to get 20 more minutes. And I got maybe 7 or 10 minutes of new jokes after that. And then everything closed. And, you know, if I can't work off an audience, I don't know. My timing gets out of shape, you know?
Absolutely.
And it goes fast. Like, I feel out of shape after, like, a week of not doing shows. So, like, I have to, like... Right. You know, and so I was thinking, if I drop my special and then I get booked to headline something, I want to be ready to go without doing all these old jokes that I just put out. So I was working, but now it's like, I have this same exact feeling of you of like, well, I can't even practice, so...
No, and I actually have a gig. The only gig that stayed on the books is Halloween weekend at the Comedy Catch in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Headlining that club for the weekend, and that's still on the books. But I will have not done comedy since March, probably.
Yeah,
by the
right.
time I get there, you know, and I'm sort of like, okay, I think for the first show, I'm really gonna have to say, guys, we're gonna have to, you know, we'll just get through this together. But it might be a little rough, you know.
I want to talk. Just I remember you very clearly from. When I lived in New Orleans from 2014 to 2017, I think we first did a show together at the Twist of Lime, and there I just thought you were so hilarious and so crazy on stage.
Well, thank you.
And then Ashley, but you have another character after Ashley.
I do a couple of characters. Which one are you talking about?
There was one that you had a red wig on.
Oh yeah, I don't really have a name for her, Janice something. She's one I'm working on, like an old stripper, you know, like that old stripper at the club.
All right, can I talk to Janice, like, please?
short. Hello, Eric. How are you, honey?
Hi, Janice. How's everything going at the salon?
You know, well, no, not, I'm not at a salon, honey. I'm at a strip club.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, I did used to work at a salon when I was in my 20s. But, you know, you can do hair for 8 hours, or you can take your clothes off and make 4 times what you made there. And so that's what I started to do. I started to make money with, you know, my body.
And how do you feel? What kind of clients go for you?
You never know. You know, right now it's a lot of older men. I like to think of myself as a boutique stripper. You know, I'm very specialized. You know, like there's one woman there who recently, well, you know, they tried to sell food at the strip club, and you should never do that, honey. It's not good, right? They do an all-you-can-eat buffet, and she had oiled herself down and got too close to one of the chafing dishes and just went right up, you know. But she had to work after she recovered. She looks like Freddy Krueger, but she still works, you know. So, you know, people ask for her. They come in and say, I want the burnt one, you know. And so I kind of work with her, you know.
So what's your speciality? How do you rope in the older customer? How do you seduce them?
Rohypnol and you know, other things to make them really find you attractive. You know, I've always been very good at talking men out of their money.
Now, do you ever sit on some laps and give them a little preview of what a lap dance would be? How much do you give for free before you start charging them?
Well, here's the thing. Lap dances are free, but I'll probably go through your wallet while I'm on top of you. I'm so heavy that they sort of lose consciousness through it, you know? And so at that moment, I get to go through their wallets, see what kind of cash they have. And I say, oh, it's on the house, you know? But really, they've just given me enough to pay my cable bill.
Wow, and you make 4 times more doing that than when you were younger at the hair salon.
Not anymore.
What are you pulling?
It's about twice as much.
What are you pulling?
What do I pull in? About $53 a week. It's good money for the area.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Do you have any advice when the younger strippers come in and start moving in on your men? How do you compete with the other little, the fresh-faced whores at the strip club?
Well, here's the thing about the young ones at the strip club. It's very easy to make them disappear. When you're as old as I am, you know people, and, you know, you just, what can I say, you buy someone a case of beer and a carton of cigarettes, and suddenly Jasmine isn't around anymore. You know what I mean?
It's one of those, it's a one-pony town, huh?
Yeah. I mean, if you're nice to me, I'm nice to you. If you're not, well, you're alligator food.
Man,
my father was in the mob.
That's a cutthroat business.
It is. Small town strip clubs are very, very competitive.
How did your dad get into the mob? Was he a casino guy? Was he a drug runner? Was he a bootlegger, a moonshiner?
No, he owned a delicatessen. And they just loved his pastrami. And one day he, you know, was just a part of it. They sent him a letter, said, congratulations, you're a mobster. And, you know, from then on he was, you know, extortion and blackmail and whatever he could get his hands on. And he had the best, the best vegetable beef soup.
Wow. So is that why you're heavy now? Is that because you were growing up at the deli?
Well, that's where it started, of course. But, you know, as I got older, I developed a glandular thyroid thing that I just never took care of.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault if it's glandular.
No. It runs in my family. My Aunt Janice is the size of a Buick.
Wait, I thought you were Janice. She's Janice.
I'm named after her.
Oh.
She's the namesake, and I'm named after her. When I came out, when I was pushed from my mother's womb, I was 26 pounds. I split the woman wide open. And they said, you know what? She's going to be like Janice. I mean, Janice was watching from a dump truck out in the parking lot with some binoculars. And they were like, Janice, we're going to name her after you because she's enormous, just like you are.
And that's, so she just, her getting around car was a dump truck because she was a heavier lady?
Yeah, well, she can't move, you know, like, so they just dump her in. I don't know how you get her into the dump truck. I know that when they get her home, they just kind of, you know, they just lift up the dump thing and she rolls out onto the lawn.
Janice, let me ask you this. How did you discover your stripper skills, you know, when you were just dating men in college or high school or wherever you went? How did you realize that you were just a master seduction artist?
Of course. Well, back then, we used to all hang out at the malt shops. And every time we would go to the malt shops, somehow or another, my boobs would come out, right? I mean, we'd be sitting there drinking malts, listening to Elvis, eating burgers, and all of a sudden I'm topless. And, you know, one day, someone said to me, Janice, you can make some money with this. And I said, really? And they said, yeah. And I said, but I'm doing hair. And they said, it doesn't matter. Go be yourself. Go be you. You need to let those puppies fly. And so I did.
So at the strip club, when you first went, I don't know how many different strip clubs you worked at, but what was the initiation process? Did any, like, gross owners of strip clubs try to break you in?
Oh, honey. They're all gross owners, every single one of them. But remember, I've got mafia ties, right? And so, listen, I've looked like this my entire life. And so I walk in because my uncle Reno got me an interview with this guy named Marty. And I walk in, he had a club named, it was called Rainbow Stallions. And I walk in. And he says, there's no way you're dancing here, Janice. And I said, why? He said, because you're disgusting. And so, you know, I had my uncle just send some guys over and beat the crap out of him. And so I was on stage that Saturday night. So I didn't make any money, but I was on that stage.
So your Uncle Reno beat up Marty? At the Rainbow Stallions?
Because, well, yes. Reno sent people to beat up Marty, right? Reno's a classy guy. No, he's a classy guy. He would never do that, but he pays people to do it. And so, you know, Marty, I've never been harassed because I just won't stand for that sort of thing. Also, most people don't really want to do it to me. Because some people actually think that I'm like, I don't know what the word for that is, repugnant. And so it's hard, you know, to do what I do. And that's why I'm so good at it, I think.
So when you had Rainbow Stallions on your resume, and then you go to like the smaller mom and pop strip clubs, That really stood out, right?
Well, you know, what they knew they were getting from me was professionalism, right? They knew that I was going to come in there, I would not be all, you know, messed up like the other girls until around midnight. But when I got there, I was sober. I was stone cold sober. And they knew that I was going to get the money out of the customers, even if I had to beat the crap out of them.
And did any, like, high-power businessmen or politicians come through and write, the rule is discretion? You didn't see nothing? You don't know nobody?
No, absolutely. I remember I was sitting on Gerald Ford's face, and his assistant or whatever was in the room, and she was like, get off of him, you're gonna kill him. And I was like, what the fuck does he care? He's got nothing else to do with his life. He was president. Where do you go from there, you know?
Right.
I mean, what do you do after that? And she was like, get off him. And, you know, I do this thing where I just lift up a thing so they can get a little breath of fresh air in there. And he loved it. He absolutely loved it. He signed a headshot. You know, he said, "Janice, you take my breath away, Gerald." And, you know, so I, you know, normally when people are with me, you know, I think that they're so shocked that they had a great time, they don't even know to tell me not to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm. And, like, he was only president, like, one term, right, Gerald Ford? So it's like, he peaked early, so...
I don't pay attention to politics.
Right, right.
I don't know whether or not he was one term or six terms or what, I don't know.
Wow, Janice, thanks so much. Let me talk to Jeff again.
You're welcome. Hold on, Jeff's in the bathroom. It was a pleasure talking to
nice,
you.
Nice to talk to you, Janice.
Eric, why do you do this to me?
Yeah, she doesn't get off the phone. She's a little chatty, that Janice, but...
She is chatty. That's how she makes her money.
She just keeps it going. There's always a party when Janice is around.
You know, and when you turn 42, when you get into your 40s and up, you start to really think, like, you know, oh, shit, this is going to end at some point. And there are things I can do to extend that or make it a hell of a lot shorter, you know? And so I start to think, like, what happens when you die? Like, you know, because I'm not so sure of all the stories they tell. Like, I knew this woman when her husband died. Her husband loved to hunt deer, you know. And so she was like, "I know that Ricky is up there at that deer stand in heaven right now." Like, Ricky died, and he's hunting deer in heaven. This woman also believes that animals have spirits. So I'm imagining the deer waking up in heaven, seeing Ricky, and he's like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" It's not fair. Bambi went across the rainbow bridge to get shot again.
Well, you know, they just throw money at her to get her the hell away from them.
So, but Ashley's a much different character. I got it confused. Is Ashley from the... She works at the salon, not Janice? Ashley works at the salon.
Ashley is the hairdresser.
Okay, yeah. I got them mixed up. So then... And Ashley just has more sort of domestic issues, right?
Right. Ashley deals with her sister and, you know... Ashley is really the one who talks about what's going on in the world and how it affects her and, you know, that kind of thing.
I saw, you know, Ashley first as a karaoke performance.
Yes. Well, she's in a drag show. You know, there during the comedy cabaret that I would do at Oz, which who knows whether or not that's coming back, she would do, you know, there were drag performers in the show, so Ashley wanted to do her drag number, which was, you know, lip-syncing to Lil Reba McEntire and Carrie Underwood, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then how did it evolve from there? Did you just, like, give her... So when you're at the drag show, a comedy cabaret, and, you know, Ashley just finishes up a karaoke, then she starts to talk and you slowly found the character? Is that what happened?
Well, no. My husband's a drag queen, and so he has a lot of wigs here, so I just would put on his wig sometimes... practice, and then I said, you know what, I'm going to do this at the show and see how it goes, and I ended up making like $50 in tips, so I was like, I'm going to keep doing this, you know.
$50? So
that's the motivation. Well, the thing is, yeah, well, at a gay club, you know, people are used to tipping the drag queens, right, you know, but comedians, they're not really sure how to deal with them, and so me doing my musical numbers was a way to let the crowd know, it's okay to give me dollar bills, too.
Right, right. Because I also did music.
I want to go eat at the Waffle House with the girls. Come on, give me some money.
Right, right. So. You're smart. You're just like Janice. You know, I can see why you and Janice have a lot in common.
Oh, yeah. Jeff, me and Janice do have a lot in common. Let me tell you something. We can tear up the Waffle House at 3 o'clock in the morning.
So when I was driving across the country doing my, by the way, I want to plug your album, Ashley. Where can people get your album, Ashley?
Well, my album, thank you for asking, Eric, is called April, It's Jeff D. April. You just look it up on any April. Digital platform. Yes, it's called April.
Sorry, you got so many characters that I'm trying to keep up. You have April, Ashley,
April's
and Janet.
April's not really... Well, April's not... I guess I could... Yeah, I could turn April... April... It's not, I do her voice in it, but... well, it's actually not her voice. It's people yelling for her. April is the bachelorette in a bachelorette party.
You know, my husband and I actually just celebrated 5 years of legal marriage. Thank you. Thank you. But we got gay married before it was cool to get gay married. Like, we got gay married before, and I know that they say, it's not gay marriage, it's marriage. I had to drive to Iowa. That's gay marriage, motherfucker. Only the gays had to do that, you know. So we had to drive all the way to Iowa to do it. And I don't know if you know this, but Iowa is more at the top of the country. New Orleans is way at the bottom. And I believe that it should be a law that every couple, gay or straight, the day before you exchange vows, should have to spend 18 hours in a car with the person you're about to spend the rest of your goddamn life with. And you should have to listen to their music the whole way there. If I heard one more goddamn Britney Spears song, I was gonna call up the lesbian I dated in high school and be like, hey, sir, you having second thoughts? I did date a lesbian in high school. She told me she wanted to be a painter. I thought she meant canvases, she meant fences. Yeah. Sure, she's done houses too.
Uh-huh. And so I make fun of bachelorette parties on the album. And so I just called it April, and there's a picture of me dressed as a bachelorette. Jeff D. April. You can get it on all digital platforms. Or you can go to jeffdcomedy.com and get a signed CD from me, which also comes with a digital download. So you can use the CD as like a coaster and then get the digital download to actually listen to.
Well, I want to do a shameless plug for myself, and then I want to tell you a story. So you could also go to erichollerbach.com. If you click on the comedy specials, I got 3 comedy specials there that are just on YouTube. And they're conspiracies and dick jokes, fart porn and beer halls, and it's a medical device. And you'll see me in New Orleans. You know, I filmed a lot of shows in New Orleans when I was in town. I'm not sure if the comedy cabaret made it in. I'm not sure. I don't know, but...
Well, you know, that's a tough room, man. You know, like, it's late at night on a Thursday night. I remember you doing well, though. I don't remember you eating shit, but a lot of comics come through and just eat shit.
I think
like
I ate
people
shit.
Who...
Yeah, yeah. No, I remember I did...
I don't think you ate shit.
I went the morning before, or the night before, or something like that. I was at in Lafayette, and I played... what's his name?
Oh, Leonard's room?
No, McGill al-Baghdadi's room. No, it was in Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge.
Oh,
Happy's,
okay.
Happy's Irish Pub with Miguel al-Baghdadi. So I did that.
I worked with him one time in a little shit bar in Houma, Louisiana. That was a fun show. he's a nice guy. So
I did this joke about hipsters, how, they used to be just annoying with the bands that they like. Oh, you don't know the Painted Sunflowers? I'm better than you because I know this band. But now they're like that with causes. They like obscure causes, hipsters. They're like, oh, you didn't know? The nuns in Bulgaria never have shoes. So try knowing about stuff. So I did this joke at Happy's, and then I did it at your show, and it kind of was lukewarm because, like, I feel like drag clubs don't really care about hipsters. That's not their world. They don't interact with them. So if I did like more, you know, blowjob or gay sex jokes, I think they would have.
That's what they want.
I know.
That's what they want. It's
you gotta know your audience.
Yes. Read the room, for Christ's sake. You know, they just took their ecstasy. They're waiting for it to kick in. You know, and we're just getting them over that bridge.
Yeah. So I was like, making fun of hipsters, and they ride around in these tall bikes with the one big wheel, and they take selfies. They're like, we don't know about them. We suck dick in wigs.
Yeah, they were like, take your clothes off, daddy.
Yeah. They didn't give a shit. But
no.
You still paid me $25, and I did get a $5 tip, because I think one guy liked me, so he gave me a $5
tip. Well, there you go.
So
and
I made
sure $30. I bought you a drink.
Oh, yeah. So you always took care of me. And by the way, and more importantly, the reason why I'm calling you now and the reason why we're friends is because when you would take on stage, you would make me laugh so hard. When you would do, because Ashley doesn't just do karaoke. I mean, her whole body, she's doing cartwheels. She's like screaming. Her wig falls off. It's just crazy. So just
you are out of your mind.
You doing that always made me laugh, and I really appreciate you. But
thank you.
So when I was maybe biting a little of your style, because I started to hallucinate. You know, when I drove from L.A. to New Orleans to New York City, I started to hallucinate because I'm driving like 11 hours a day.
Right.
And I started to play a Southern character that's rode hard and hung up wet, and but I don't have a name for her. So I'm just going to talk in this character and ask me questions if you want. But I need you to name her, Jeff D, okay?
Okay.
So she's always talking about Grayson. He's my husband, but he goes crazy. He takes that crystal meth. He gambles. But he always lands on his feet. He got caught with the DUI. The judge came in. He won a craps game against the judge and the mayor. Next thing you know, he blows both of them, and now we have a new addition to our house on the city dime. They just came in, they built us a porch, they built us a whole drainage system. Grayson, he's crazy. I don't know. My church friends just think I should sit on my front stoop and drink whole milk, but that life is not like for me. I just, there's something exciting about living with Grayson. He's always,
how about why whole milk? Why whole milk?
Because that's the way God intended. If he wanted a skinnier cow, a skinnier milk, he would have made it that way. It's perfect. Whole. You don't want a percentage of God's love, do you? You want it all.
What is it about Grayson that you love?
Well, Grayson, he always comes home to me, except when he's under the bridge or something. Collecting tolls or whatever he does. But
under the bridge? He collects tolls under the bridge?
Well, that's just his place of business. I don't... Okay. I only read the police reports, what Grayson gets into, but it's thrilling to me somehow. It keeps me on my toes.
Do you and Grayson ever go out at night or anything with his money from the tolls?
Yeah, Grayson, he's my husband, you know. He takes me out sometimes, but it's always more like his tire exploded in a high-speed chase or something, so then I have to take the Buick and go find him. So if you call that taking me out at night, then I guess so. I got real good with a jack and a tow hitch.
Sounds like you guys lead a very exciting life.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just work part-time down at the PTA. We don't have kids yet. I keep trying to tell Grace and my husband to put it inside me one time and maybe make some babies, but he's always off gallivanting, womanizing, mannerizing, you know, all
you,
that.
You know what I'm getting? I'm getting Mindy.
Mindy, interesting.
Mindy. Yeah,
see,
like Mindy.
Sometimes I lose because my Jersey accent is really aggressive and it's always trying to come out. So when I want to go Southern again, I just go, Grice, he's my husband. And like that's my hook to get me back in the accent.
You actually sound like one of my little sister's friends. you know, they're all like almost 40 now. I say my little sister, but she's 38. And she just always sounds fucked up, even if she's not, you know, like, right. She's always like, hey, Seth, it's Casey. I'm like, I can't understand what you're saying.
Is she, like, disassociating from all the childhood trauma, so she's always just, like, in a dump?
I guess, And I'm like, you know, my sister, I'm like, how many pills does she take? She goes, what are you talking about? She's completely sober. I'm like, oh, okay, well, her face is melting. But,
is her name,
you know,
Mindy?
So your southern accent is, I can understand what Mindy, if that's what you want to call her, is saying, but it's a very slow draw you got going on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because I'm always, I think I slow it down so I can give the details of what Grayson's up to. So I have to, like, slow down so I can, like, think about, like, the most fucked up shit that Grayson's up to, you know?
Grayson sounds like a winner.
Yeah, so it's just, what, for me, the character is all about, Grayson's obviously a gay hooker who gambles right. and is on drugs. But
he's got a huge cock.
But
and
yeah.
he spreads it all around. But Mindy is his safety net, you know.
And Mindy's always trying to keep the marriage together in her head. Like, no,
right.
it makes this marriage makes sense because at the end of the day, blah blah blah. But then she admits all the things Grayson's up to. So she
right.
lives
well,
in two worlds.
Do you think
worlds.
She knows it? Does she know it, or is she in denial, or is she dumb?
I think both of those are at play. I think she's
okay.
Yeah, it's a big denial thing. Like her, she grew up with church friends. She's always talking about her church friends that are boring and
yeah.
do nothing. And she's like, "Well, I don't want that life, but what I'm putting up with is like worse, you know." So
I love it. I can't wait to see you do it.
All right, Mindy.
See, for me, it's a question of where do you fit the character in on stage, and I think, and I'm definitely going to experiment with that because I would do Ashley at the gay club, but I've never done her at like the straight clubs, you know, where I'm headlining or even, you know, featuring or whatever. And I think that I'm going to start doing her.
We just shame each other. And one thing that I have started to see people shame other people about, I'm going to get in trouble for this too, but people are shaming people, other people who spank their kids, right? And we all know there's a difference between abusing a child and spanking a child, right? And it's your call, right? You don't have to spank your kid. You can use timeouts and whatnot. You do whatever you want to do. You raise your kid however you want to. You don't have to spank them. You're probably raising an asshole. But that's your call. Right? I was in a restaurant and I was sitting waiting for my waiter to come over. And she was at a table where there was a married couple and their kid, and the kid was on his iPad, right? And the waiter was sitting there waiting to get their drink order, and the mother was looking at the kid going, Caden, what do you want to drink? Caden, put that down. What do you want to drink? You want Sprite or Dr. Pepper? Caden, do you want Sprite or Dr. Pepper? Caden, put that down. Caden, I'm so sorry. Caden, you're being rude. Put that down. Do you want Sprite or Dr. Pepper? Caden, put that down. Caden, what do you want to drink? You want Sprite or Dr. Pepper? Caden, talk to me. Caden, what is your decision? Do you want Sprite or Dr. Pepper? Caden, put that down. I'm really sorry. Caden, put that down. Caden, put it down. I'm so sorry. Caden, look at me. What do you want? Sprite? And I'm like, hit that little asshole. My father would have taken that iPad, cracked it over my head, and then he'd have looked at the waiter and said, he will have crackers and water when he wakes up.
Kind of my whole career just kind of crashed down, so I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to do it the way I want to do it.
Let's yeah. You know what I would like to do? And I've never done this before, but like, you know, do a show with like three comics, but don't have it be MC feature headliner. What if it went 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, meaning 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 minutes, so that's a half hour. Then they go through and cycle again, 10, 10, 10, so you can, like, recharge your next 10 minutes of jokes instead of having to
yeah.
do 40 straight. So you can be like, oh, wait, like, go back in the back and, like, look at your joke notebook and, like, recharge yourself on and be like, oh, okay, let me do this, this, and this. But I would like to do a show.
You know,
like that.
I don't know that I would like that. I like to build up a. I don't like to break it up. You know, if I'm hosting is one thing. But you know, if I've got the audience for a while and I sort of build momentum with it, I like to keep that momentum. And if I have to, I have done shows where they're like, and then you'll take a 15-minute break and come back. when I come back, it's never the same. Does that make sense?
Well, I would...
Now, it might work if you've got the comedians, but, yeah.
No, I would say there's no intermission. It just goes...
Right.
Three comics cycle through twice. Does that make sense?
That could work, yeah.
But that's where I would do something like Mindy, because if I went backstage and then I came out again, I would come out in a wig and just be Mindy the whole time. You know what I'm saying?
There you go.
That's how I would introduce it. Because I feel like it's weird if you're just doing stand-up as yourself, and then you go, I'm going to do a character now, and then do a character, and then go back to yourself. I'd like to walk out on stage in that character and stay the whole time and then walk out like nothing. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah. No, I get it. I totally get it.
I gotta
figure out how to do it.
I had an acting teacher. I went to the New School in New York City for undergrad, and I had an acting teacher.
Oh, look at you.
Called Zishan, and she said, the most important thing, if you learn nothing, you start and then you finish. And then the curtain opened, the curtain closed. Most important, when did it start? Because if you mutter out at the end, if it's like, where do we clap? I don't know how this begin. I don't know where it ends. You fucking start and you fucking finish.
Right? And I'm not saying there aren't things to fight for. Of course there are. But when we're just screaming at each other, nothing gets done, right? They're screaming at each other. So you have them, you have the immigrant who just wants to work. And you have the rest of us who just want to shit in peace. Thank you guys very much.
And that always like really stuck with me, you know, as a showbiz
guy. That's hilarious. I don't know how. I mean, of course, that goes with, you know, if you're doing, Death of a Salesman. But if you're a comedian, I guess you have to finish. The question is, do you finish big or do you just walk off the stage?
Right. Well, don't you want to finish big? Leave them wanting more?
Absolutely. But I think most people know when they're not able to do that. Actually, no. New comedians have no idea that they're bombing. And not even new ones. There are some people who've been doing it for years, and they'll do a show with me, and afterwards they're like, you know, that went great, you know, and I think I really had them, and I'm like, God damn, you are so delusional, you know, but they're out there, man.
Can I name some names and have you say yes or no? Never mind.
Sure, if you want to.
No, let's not play that. All right. I'm already hot.
Nobody has a career now. Nobody can hurt me or help me. You know what I mean? Like, fuck it.
I got banned from the high ho for 2 years. That's all I'll say about that. But all right, Mindy. I'm gonna be Mindy. I like Mindy. Oh, the other thing,
Mindy's good, right?
My acting teacher told me, and this is like one of the most important lessons. She goes, "You cannot." wait. She was like, "How will you play Romeo and Juliet if you don't fuck? Like, how are you going to know how to love if you don't suck?" Like, you have to fucking suck each other to know how to love. You should
must
be fucking
fuck your classmates. Yes.
And then she had us massage each other, you know? Bro.
Hey, you know, that's what those acting classes in college. I got a degree in theater, too. And, you know, they were just, it was really all about just getting us together to fuck each other, wasn't it? Like,
yeah.
You know, trust your partner. You got to trust your partner and.
And
you
be
know,
comfortable
really
with
expose your soul to each other, you know, like, yeah.
But she was like, you don't know how to have emotions if you haven't had emotions. Like, you know, love and lose and this and that and take chances. And she would, like, have these speeches like, you have to live a little out there, put yourself out there all the time so that you can do it when you're acting. It was interesting.
You know what? There's an old story about the movie Marathon Man. Where Dustin Hoffman was working with, what's his name? He was famous for Shakespeare. He did all the great Shakespeare movies. Hang on, I'm using...
Sir Ian McKellen?
No, Laurence Olivier.
Oh, Laurence Olivier.
With Laurence Olivier.
Okay.
And so Hoffman, he's playing this guy who's like really paranoid and exhausted and stuff and scared. So he's staying up all night long. He's not sleeping. You know, and Olivier asks him how he's doing. He's like, you know, I'm good. I'm really trying to get into the character. I haven't slept in 2 days. You know, I really want to just be him, and I want to really connect with him. And Olivier looks at him and says, "My dear boy, have you ever tried acting?" You know? And it's really funny when you say that your teacher is like, "You have to lose to know how to lose." And I think I was a better actor in college when I was making all that shit up, you know, before I became an adult and lost and learned and all this stuff. I don't want to access those fucking emotions. You know what I'm saying? Like, the real life bullshit is bullshit, man. You know, I can fake it.
Yeah, so you'd rather just be hopeful and a blank canvas so you can just absorb the words on the page.
Yeah. You know, my dream, I want to play a villain one day. It doesn't mean I need to kill someone to figure out what it's like. Or, you know, actors take themselves way too seriously with that shit. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to feel it deep in your bones. Okay, all right. Whatever. You play pretend for a living. Let's do this. Action! You know.
And who is that guy who played the Joker and took all those drugs and then died?
Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger, yeah.
Heath Ledger. He was great in that movie, though.
Right?
Yeah.
You know who this reminds me of is John Rowe. You know, John Rowe.
Oh, yeah.
He was living, kind of like, he was drinking a lot, but I would be so jealous of him. Like, he would be drinking, he'd be all fucked up, and then he walks on stage. And he's so authentic, and he's the guy who's like, "You ever try to date a lesbian who breaks your heart?" Like, he would just start with something that was so funny. That, like...
He was great.
Yeah.
He did my show at Oz once, and he had taken, like, 4 hits of acid. And we have this guy who comes every week and just, like, giggles really loud. I think he's got Tourette's or something. Or he's had something, but he giggles really loud and he says things, you know, and he was there and he was, you know, there wasn't a big crowd and he was taking up a whole table and he just kept reacting to John. And John looks at me and goes, "Is that guy really there or am I just tripping right now?" You know, he has the audience. Is there a person right here? Because, this guy's fucking me up. You know, it was funny. John was great. What a waste, man.
Yeah, that was, like, he really brought everybody together. Like, everyone, no matter who they were friends with, everyone was friends with John Rowe.
Racism. I think I'm happy to be black, though. Because, like, it's exciting. You ever been a black man, anybody? Isn't it exciting, Kyle? Shit's like, every day is an adventure. Every day you don't know what's going to happen. Like, am I going to get shot in the face by a cop or another black man? What's going to happen? Am I going to get high blood pressure or hypertension? What's going to happen? I'm going to get a T-cell? I don't know, you know? I think it's so exciting. I think that's the reason we don't do extreme. I think that's why white people do extreme sports, because, like, it's just, like, the only thing white people have to worry about is the sun. Which is a big worry, though. I am happy that the sun won't kill us. The sun kills white people. Which I think is really ironic. It's like God saying, "I know y'all have enslaved a lot of people, but here's a big-ass obstacle for you to have. Melanoma for your ass." It's fun when I'm dating a white girl and we're at some shit like Bayou Boogaloo and I see her just burning. I'm like, "Baby, you know you're burning, right? Like, you ever just watch your white girlfriend burn? Like, you're burning up." They don't want to admit it, though. Like, "Nah, bitch, you was never that red. We need to go home." They're like, "Nah, I'm okay. Nah, we're not going to be able to fuck for 2 weeks if you do this." Ah, white people. White people weird. White people turned this tire shop across the street from a tire shop into an art gallery. Because art's so important. Nah, it's like we need to look at these elephants with 6 legs, but we fuck these tires. We don't need car tires. Like, what we gonna do? I guess they all have bikes. I don't know. It's like, where's the weird point of gentrification, man? Like, why? I mean, it was a tire shop, but where are we gonna get our tires from? I won't fight for the practicality of it. It's a beautiful art gallery. You go there once, though, but how many times do you need to go to this art gallery? You might need a tire shop every 6 months. Art gallery, one time, I mean, how much art can they make? You need a lot more tires. Life is weird. One time I had sex with a girl, then she moved away, and then she got HIV. That's called shock. I was shocked also. I didn't know how to deal with myself. I was like, oh my God, how you get HIV in Arkansas? I'm over here in the home of HIV, New Orleans, Louisiana. Over here wrapping up, being protected. You get HIV in Arkansas, and now you love me. No, because she didn't love me before she got HIV, but I don't know. Point of that joke is I can't talk to someone with HIV because like, I was trying to cheer her up. I was like, oh my God, it's terrible. You're going to be okay. Then I told her a joke, and she didn't get it. And then she texted me back, I don't look at your sense of humor. And I was like, bitch, that's why you got HIV. I did it so fast, and then I knew it was bad, but I was hurt. Like, don't hurt me, because I'm going to hurt you. And I hurt her, and I realized every time she, like, if she I'm just petty like that. Like, if we talked, and she told me to take out the trash, I was like, bitch, why don't you take out the trash? You don't want HIV.
Oh, my God.
I know I'm a bad person. Leave me alone, okay? I still don't have HIV, though. Getting HIV in Arkansas. In Arkansas. I feel like you have to look for that. We're in New Orleans. Make some noise if you have HIV. I won't talk about you probably.
It was so crazy. I actually, when I drove across the country, I visited his grave in Baton Rouge. And he's, you know, he was like 26. He wasn't even 27, man.
Yeah. Well, it's good to know that that they brought John home. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. That was tough. Are things opening back up slowly now in New Orleans?
No. No, they're not.
Not at all?
In fact, they were opening up slowly, but, you know, we people in Louisiana, we fucked that all up. So they had to shut down the bars completely, right? The governor and the mayor had opened up bars to run at 50% capacity. The rule was you can only have a few seats at the bar. People couldn't congregate. They had to sit at individual tables. Right. And you know, Bourbon Street just fucked that up. They couldn't keep up with that, and they didn't. Some bars were, you know, and it didn't work in Louisiana, and so they just shut everything down.
It's just the nature. It's just people bar hop. It's just the nature of that street.
Well, and the point is, when you get good luck social distancing when you're drunk, you know, like that's when you're going to be talking loud to people and, you know, moving around. And so I guess it's in the best interest of public health, but, you know, screwed the entertainers around here. So, yeah, let's just hope they get together and put another financial package together if they can get along.
No, I think they're on vacation again.
No, they are on vacation, you know, which is great. So that's... Like, you know, this is what I'm talking about, Eric. I'm just gonna walk into fucking traffic. Who gives a shit?
I'm gonna do
my gig in Chattanooga, and then I'm gonna be like, and I'll see y'all on the interstate. Good night, everybody.
All right, well, go to Jeff D Comedy. Get April the album. Support Jeff D while he can't do live shows anymore. But you're a gem.
Well, I bought a speaker during this whole thing, and so my goal is once the numbers come down a little bit, you know. Is to like just find bars where they don't do shows and be like, look, I'll come in, pay me this little bit, and I'll do a show. You know,
I've got
a speaker, I've got a mic, and let's just do something. You know, I just want to work and build something, because that's the thing. Like, once this is done, if it'll ever be done, once they have a vaccine, you know, I mean, every comedian in the country is going to be wanting to get in to comedy clubs and whatever rooms that were available before, you know. And so I just think it's in my best interest to kind of forge my own road, you know. And if any of those bigger rooms reach out to me again, absolutely, I'll do it. But I think that I really want to, like, go on the road and do places that really don't have comedy shows happening. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, break in new rooms and, like, you know, have your own little...
Thank you. I walk up to this tray of all these little fried nuggets, and I'm like, oh my God, that looks good. What is that? She's like, oh, that's a fried monkey pussy. Okay.
Yeah, well, not even break it in, but just, you know, like, let's do one night, see how it goes, and then I'll move on to the next town, you know. And I don't plan on, like, starting a weekly show there, but, you know, when you say break in, that means it's going to get lubed up for something else.
No, no. Not that term. Maybe we're speaking a different language, but, like, you know, any kind of nice restaurant that has never done a show but has a nice space for it. That's what I meant.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking more like little bars and stuff, but yeah. You know, I want to do that place that you see off the highway that's got like 8 cars in front, you know, and like half the sign doesn't work, you know, and it's made of wood paneling and stuff, you know. I want to do that bar. I want to go in there and talk to those people.
Yeah, you know? There's a place in New Jersey called Bernie's Tavern in Chester, New Jersey, and that place is a gem in the middle of the woods. It's a good place.
I would love to do Bernie's Tavern in New Jersey. That's what I'm talking about, though. Just kind of stay on the road for a little while and, you know, I don't know, build something. Because I think that's what everybody's going to have to do now is build something.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of bars, when they open, they'll be kind of like, they haven't been open in a while, so they'll be like, you know, all right, well, what should we try? You know, they might be, as they reopen, like, kind of take in offers, you know?
Well, see, that's the problem, like, with the places that would pay here in Louisiana, and I'm just talking about Louisiana specifically, like my weekly show, let's say, on Bourbon, when they do finally open up, they're not going to just say, all right, balls to the wall, open the doors. They're going to say 50% capacity,
yeah,
probably.
Uh-huh.
And so those bars, having lost so much money, are not going to want to pay entertainers. My job is to pack the place out.
You've seen him everywhere. He's amazing, and you get to see him now. So give it up for Jeff D, everybody.
Right.
And they're not going to want to pay me to do that. You know, they're just going to say, all right, we're just going to sell alcohol for a while. So it's going to be even longer, I think, in New Orleans before entertainment is brought back. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it's a long process. It's kind of crazy that this thing has gone on for 7 months now or whatever. It's like,
well,
what the hell?
We're not doing it right. You don't have proper federal leadership, you know, like people aren't doing it right. You got a president who supports conspiracy theories, you know, like about, you know, people who are working for him in the CDC and stuff. Like, how can we get it right at that level? You know, the idiots are being emboldened, and so the idiots are fucking it all up, you know. Do you know that if you wear a mask, you're more likely to get the disease? Okay, Opie, thank you very much. That sounds great. Where did you read that? What QAnon fucking dumbass website did you look that up on? I read it. I know. You know, now they're saying, they always say, now they're saying, who is they? Who is the they you're talking about? Is it doctors and scientists? No, then shut the fuck up, you know.
There is always this vague term when, you know. But I think, you know, what the person that I go to for knowledge is Janice, it's April, it's Ashley, I mean,
yes.
You know, Mindy.
Mindy's good too. Mindy knows things.
There's salt to the earth.
She sits on her porch drinking milk and knows.
He always comes home with lipstick on. And he, you know, Grayson, he comes home with lipstick on his neck and smelling like aftershave. I never know if he's coming or going.
Oh, my God, that's great.
All right, Jeff D. Well, I love you very much. Go to Jeff D Comedy, everybody. Go to EricHollerbach.com. And thanks for being on my podcast, my dude.
Thank you, Eric. It was a pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
All right. Bye.